For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Unlock a new era in podcasting with Unfiltered Studios. Ready to break free from the ordinary? Dive into a world where authenticity meets innovation. Our network isn't just about podcasts. It's a revolution. From nostalgia to movies, sports to self-improvement, find your favorite podcast in an array of diverse shows, only at Unfiltered Studios. Join the movement. Subscribe to Unfiltered Studios today and join the podcasting revolution. Unfiltered Studios, where every voice finds its place. Visit unfpod.com today to find your favorite show.
Unfiltered Studios will help you press record.
And hello, movie lovers, and welcome to the show. I have two very special guests with me. I actually, from It Doesn't Hold Up podcast, I got Stu here, I got Smith here. We're talking about hooking up some illegal cable here. But don't worry, we're going to slip our cable guy $50, and hopefully he won't stalk us for the rest of the podcast. So, with further ado, let's go on ahead, let's get on with the show. Guys, welcome to the show.
Hey, good to be back.
Hi there.
Hey, it's good having you guys back. I enjoyed our review for Blank Check, and now I was like, you know what? What would be a perfect movie for me to be able to review with you guys than another Jim Carrey movie, because I know you guys did Batman Forever. So I was like, you know what? Let's just follow it up with The Cable Guy.
I mean, we've done Ace Ventura, we've done The Mask, we've done Batman Forever, so why not The Cable Guy? Why not?
Exactly. And, you know, I remember as a kid, nostalgically, just going to the movie theater in Boston and seeing this movie for the very first time. And I mean, I was a huge Jim Carrey fan at that time, still am today. I remember The Mask. I went to see that in theaters, Dumb and Dumber. You also have, we also have Ace Ventura, When Nature Calls. Mm-hmm. And those were like the 90s flavor of Jim Carrey, the peak of Jim Carrey. And also, too, of course, Batman Forever.
Yeah.
But, you know, what scenes stand out for you? How do you feel about this nostalgically? And what is your where do you stand at this nostalgically out of 10?
Oh, wow. That's just jumping in. So I think first thing I would say is that having reviewed several Jim Carrey films for our podcast, my tolerance for Jim Carrey has gone down as I have got older quite significantly. When I was younger, I loved Jim Carrey. Ace Ventura was my favorite film. I watched all the time. And when we rewatched it, oh boy. Not aged well. This, on the other hand, if I'm talking nostalgically, I never saw this at the theater. I had it on VHS, mm-hmm. that long dead technology, and I watched it to death. So nostalgically speaking, I was really looking forward to revisiting this. It was something that I was hoping, and I was hoping upon hope that with its slightly darker, slightly edgier tone, it would be something that had held up more so than the other Jim Carrey films that we watched, and pleasantly surprised to find out that for the most part it had, and had a really good time with this. Really good time. Stu?
Yeah, I was similar. I never saw this at the cinema movie theater. In fact, I watched it because I don't know if you did the same, John. When you got to sort of near the end of school terms, teachers didn't really give a shit. And you could just like watch, you know, films in class. You could play board games, whatever. And it was the Christmas holidays just before we broke up. I think Smith actually brought in a video of The Cable Guy, and our teacher let us watch it in class. Yeah. That was the first time I watched it. I mean, we were 12. We were age appropriate to watch it.
Yeah.
And I remember back then thinking this film is weird and amazing. And yeah, I've subsequently rewatched it over the years, you know, on TV and stuff. But yeah, when I watched it recently, watched it on satellite here in the UK, yeah, I had a good time with it too. There was bits of it when I was cringing as hell, like, oh God, but I think that's the point. And then there was some bits where I did laugh my ass off as well. I was like, yeah, yeah, I had a good time with this.
So, John, just as a question for you, are you familiar with the UK video certification?
Yeah, I know the difference between NGCS and the formats and stuff.
No. I mean, so where you have PG-13 R, NC-17, do you know are you familiar with our equivalents?
How do you? Okay, tell me about it, because I know a little bit about it, but not enough.
Yeah, so we have U, which is universal, PG, which means parental guidance, which is basically a U, but you know, just letting parents know there might be something a little bit tricky in there. We then have something called 12A, which I think is the equivalent of your R for the most part, which is hold on. Okay, yeah. As in, people under 12 shouldn't see it, but can do if their parents take them.
Okay.
We then
PG-13 technically. Okay.
Yeah, okay, PG-13. We then have 15, which is nobody under 15, and 18, which is nobody under 18. We don't have R. We don't have that equivalent.
Oh, wow.
If anything 15 and over, you cannot see it if you are younger than that. It is absolutely no-go. And a lot of stuff that's R in the States sort of tends to kind of vary between 15 and 18, depending on kind of where it falls.
Here, we can actually see a rated R movie as long as we're accompanied by an adult.
Yeah, not in the UK. If it's 15 or 18 and you're 12, you're shit out of luck. You're not seeing it.
Oh, wow.
Now, the cable guy, it's changed. So in 1997, 12A came in for the release of Jurassic Park, The Lost World. They basically created 12A for Jurassic Park, The Lost World, because they realized they could make an awful lot of money by selling Jurassic Park, The Lost World tickets. But they couldn't quite pass it as a PG because it was more violent than the first one. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Before that, as I recall, there was just hard 12.
Yeah.
And then 12 became 12A. And then 12 stopped existing. If I remember correctly, the cable guy was a PG, always has been. A parental. Stuart, you're shaking your head.
No, I've always remembered it being a 12 because there's quite a lot 12? Of swearing in it and tricky content in there.
I'm going to look this up.
No, the mask was a PG, but I always remember the cable guy being a 12.
Hmm.
Yeah. Anyway, we're going off topic here.
Yes.
It's perfectly fine. But yeah, PG-13 over here in the States and stuff. So at first I thought this was rated R. I just thought maybe it had that rated R flavor to it, especially with some of the stuff in context of what they were talking about, especially when you had the date game, not the date game, but the password game.
Porno password. Yeah.
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 Well, we'll talk about that in a while, but yeah.
It's funny you say that. Apparently, there does exist another cut of this movie that is more R-rated. So apparently when Ben Stiller, the director, was directing it, he would shoot things twice. He would shoot the take, which was, you know, quite fun and went crazy, and then he'd do one that was really dark and sinister. Like, so, and the end result, you get a bit of a blend of both. But there is another cut of this that's really, really dark. So somewhere out there, there does exist an R-rated version of The Cable Guy. God knows what's in it.
Right. I would like to actually see them re-release this and put like the director's cut and the theatrical cut on there just to see the difference of it.
Definitely.
But, you know, for me, as someone that enjoyed The Cable Guy and stuff like that, and it does hold a special place because this was actually the first soundtrack I ever owned on CD. So my grandmother gave me like $15 to go over to Blockbuster. And I picked up the album. I love this CD because of the fact it had Jim Carrey singing that one song by Jefferson Airplane. And that is Somebody to Love.
Yeah.
So, you know, I really was enticed with it. I was enthused with it. I had this on repeat all the time. I would have to say it's at least an 8.7 out of 10 for me, nostalgically.
Nostalgically, I'd probably put it somewhere about an eight out of 10, I would say.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think so. Like, yeah, it was just as fun as I remembered it. You know, there was nothing there that I'd forgotten or didn't enjoy again, but it was a bit more cringy than I remembered.
There were huge bits that I've forgotten. My memory
really?
Is terrible. So.
I'd completely
forgotten Jack Black was in it.
How?
That's actually one of the things that I do remember was Jack Black being in it and stuff.
I completely gone that the fact that he was in it. So the minute he turned up, I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
But I haven't watched
it. It seems like back in the 90s, Jack Black just showed up and stuff that you didn't even expect. Like, I Still Know What You Did Last Summer and stuff like that. So yeah. You didn't expect it.
Well, it's before he was properly. It was before he was properly famous.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was before he started getting that high paycheck and stuff like that, and of course with his band and things like that.
Yeah, but, which of course the other member of Tenacious D is in this film as well. Carl Gass is at the end the guy that picks up the book.
That was him. I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah.
And then I would have to say this is probably Jim Carrey's least quotable movie because every single other movie is very quotable. This one I would have to say is the least quotable for me, as in like if it holds up to something where you can actually say, "Hey, want a legal cable?" and then it goes, "No." If you get a legal cable, da 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 da. But it's there's no quotable stuff that actually holds within my memory bank to where I'm like, I quote this movie, quote it every day or something.
Yeah, I mean, probably the way you said Stephen with a lisp. I remember like Stephen like that. That's probably, it's probably the only thing I could quote it from. Sorry, Smith.
I couldn't quote anything from Jim Carrey. What I could quote and have quoted many many times over the year is Ben Stiller going, "I think he was Asian."
Stuck
in there, and that won't come out.
Yeah. Oh my God, my brother's been shot. Funny.
But yeah, guys, let's go ahead. Now that we actually talked about this movie nostalgically, now we're going to remove the nostalgia by stripping it down scene by scene. So let's go ahead and let's do it. So, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and socially awkward cable installers everywhere, welcome to another episode of Movie Lovers Tonight. Today, we're talking about a movie that made us all fear answering the door, The Cable Guy. That's right, the 1996 comedy that proved sometimes free cable comes with a side of pure insanity.
Cable Guy!
This movie had us questioning everything. Do I really need cable? Should I befriend the guy who installs it? And most importantly, what exactly is wrong with Jim Carrey lisping? Karaoke-loving, medieval times-obsessed stalker. Let's not forget about Matthew Broderick, just trying to live his best life, but instead he gets roped into a friendship with more clingy than a wet sock.
I just want to hang out. No big deal.
Man, this movie is like if single white female and Dumb and Dumber had a weird unhinged baby with a satellite dish on its head. And so grab your remotes, steal some free HBO, and prepare for a deep dive into one of Jim Carrey's most underrated and most uncomfortably hilarious performance, Let's Get Cable Guy Crazy. So, scene one. After a failed marriage proposal to his girlfriend, Robin Harris, Stephen M. Koufax moves into his own apartment, taking advice from his friend, Rick, played by Jack Black. Stephen bribes the cable guy, Ernie Chip Douglas, to give him free movie channels, which he does. Chip gets Stephen to hang out with him the next day and makes him one of his preferred customers. So let's talk about this. I love the credits at the opening. It's like nostalgia now, but it was actually more present time during the 90s. Yeah. You got Jerry Springer. Not only do we have Jerry Springer, we also have Ricky Lake. We have those talk shows. We also have the cable really glitchy and stuff like that because the coax cable and stuff. It and that part doesn't hold up as far as anything else goes within this movie because now it's all streaming and digitalized. But back then, analog was actually the way to go. But then you also have this the whole trial of the two brothers, and Ben Stiller's also playing the brothers of those kids. But what did you think of the opening?
I like the opening. It gave me a bit of a headache, and it also reminded me of how terrible analog TV was, like the quality of it. I was like, oh my God, do you remember when you had to like tune your TV to get like the picture quality and like amazing? So that was a real trip down memory lane watching all that and having the frustration of having to call like the cable company or the satellite company, like you're not receiving your channels properly or the reception's terrible. So that was a nice reminder for me just how awful TV was back then.
Yeah, we in the UK didn't necessarily have cable in the same way that you had it in America. So we did have variants of it, but we didn't have it in the same way. We had mainly Sky television, satellite television in the early 90s. It was less prevalent, really, I think, specifically in our group of friends. It's also interesting to look at some of the shows because it's really like you see some of it and I'm like, yep, I remember that because they were imports to the UK. Some of it, not a clue. Don't know what I'm looking at.
I gotcha. But you know what, though? It just goes to show you the inconvenience of the cable going out and you have to call somebody to make an appointment and he may get there the next day or he may get there in a couple of hours. So while he's having this inconvenience of his cable going out. He's also got movers coming in to move his furniture. Stephen has his, the movers coming in to get his furniture inside the place. It's over about 4 hours since he last heard from the cable company. So he's like, you know what? Screw it. I'm just going to go on ahead and take a shower. And maybe by then, maybe the cable guy might come. Because all of us do this, right? Where it's like, you know what? Boy. They're taking too fucking long. I'm just going to go on ahead and take a shower and be done. Maybe they'll come out. No. And it's always that other inconvenience of the guy coming at the exact moment when you're like, okay, well, I'm just going to go take a shower. And then here he comes. Yeah. Ringing the doorbell and you have shampoo when you're here. So it's very reminiscent to the fact that it's something that we would do.
Still happens to me now.
I can't really relate to the shampoo point, but you know, I take your point around the yeah, it's interesting that opening. It's interesting in the opening credits as well. We see they have the first clips of Ben Stiller as one of the brothers, who kind of just seeded in there before it gets into the proper like breakdown of what's going on with that. And enjoyed watching this with my partner, and I told her that thing with Ben Stiller doesn't actually play into the plot at all.
But it's great.
No, it doesn't.
And she's like, "What?" And I was like, "Yeah, it's just, I don't know. Like, it could have been anything. It's just there."
Right, yeah. Because I think it's the whole entire thing of O.J. Simpson at that time well.
No, I so think it's like, it was more okay,
well, we can't use the O.J. Simpson trial or whatever to try and make it something that represents what people would actually tune in for.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, well, let's go ahead and make our own trial up. And also, too, it actually has some reflection back on the two brothers that killed their parents, in a sense. Yeah, too.
The Menendez brothers.
Aaron, yeah, the Menendez brothers. Aaron, so Aaron, I was thinking at that kind of context.
Because they also had the famous phone call that was played as part of their court trial, where they were basically accusing a sort of an ethnic minority of committing the crime, and it's very, very similar to the Asian call that he makes later on. It's very similar. It's like, okay, I see what you're doing.
And also, just going back to when the cable car arrives. Now, it's going to be a spoiler for everyone, but there is a big plot hole with this because he's called the cable company to come and install his cable and sort it out. But then the plot twist later on is Chip Douglas doesn't work for the cable company anymore. So it's like, how did he intercept the job? Like, he called the cable company, they sent someone out. How did he end up getting the job if he didn't work for the cable company anymore? That bugged the shit out of me.
Well, what I was thinking was, and I was also thinking that same long line now, compared to where I was when I was a kid believing in this. But what I was thinking was, okay, well, we already know he hacks the phone lines.
Ah, true. He's a bit of a stalker.
So
that could be,
but the whole fact, too, he also has his cable company truck. So it's like, how does he still have a van and he's still able to operate under that?
That's true.
I will say, just very early doors, I've forgotten bits of this film, but one of the things that really stood out to me is just how good Matthew Broderick is at playing that slightly nebbish everyman. Like, he's just like quite a likable screen presence. Mm-hmm. You see him like, okay, I sympathize with you. I understand exactly where you're coming from.
Yep.
Same here. I definitely like how Matthew is actually playing the narrative of this straight edge guy. Is like, you know what? He's going through a bad breakup. His life is not going the way it needs to go. Or anything like that. Even whenever he calls up Jack Black, he's like, "So how's it going, man?" He goes, it sucks." He goes, "But it is what it is." And it's like, "Look, man, don't call her or anything," because he's also being clingy himself to his own, because he also proposed to this woman. We also don't know how long him and her were together or anything when he proposed.
True.
Yeah. So we don't know if he's been with her for a year or whatever. But it got her to where she actually had to take a break from Steven. So we don't know how long they were together. So it makes me wonder. I was like, okay, maybe he's being too clingy himself, just as Chip is also being clingy to Steven.
That's true. Yeah. And the thing that I thought was strange as well was that she doesn't say, "Oh, I'm breaking up with you." So, "Oh, we need to take a break." But I'm like, but he's had to move out and get a whole new apartment. He's probably had to sign a lease for 6 months or something like that. He's got a lot of expense just doing that. What I didn't understand is, why don't you just move in with his parents for a while or something?
Yeah.
Now, why go through this extra expense of getting your own place?
It's like no breakup or separation I've ever encountered. I don't quite understand it.
Very odd.
It's the States. Odd. You know, we actually do this where it's like, you know what, we're going to take a break. So there, it's not you, it's me. I want to go ahead. You go your way, we'll go our way. Maybe we'll rekindle our relationship and, you know, see what happens. So what do? We go ahead, we move out, and we get an apartment that we can't afford. So therefore we take a break because we don't have anywhere else to go. We don't want to move in with our parents or anything like that, because then we feel like that we're also insecure in our own way because we're men. So therefore we don't, so we want to be out on our own. We don't want to be cling to our parents. So therefore we get our own place. So that's the lines that I was thinking too on that.
Maybe.
But yeah, first, and then, you know, finally he gets out. He's like, look, man, go ahead and do what you have to do with the cable. And well, I'll take care of you after I'm done getting dressed. So next thing you know it, his furniture is disarrayed everywhere. Chip moved everything. He's over there just channel surfing with the remote. And he goes, I fixed your problem. He goes, what was wrong? Well, what I did was I had to shift all your furniture off to this side because it was giving a lot of pixelation. It was really bad picture quality, but I fixed it right here. I'm like, dude, move all my shit back and just install another coaxial cable or do whatever else. This is an inconvenience even more than when you showed up 4 hours ago. But remember, too, whenever he also got on to Chip when he was walking away, and he goes, man, where the hell are you going? He goes, oh, it's how rude of me. And, you know, and he was, and he actually called Steven a douchebag, basically.
Yeah. At this point, I might be like, you know what? Fuck this cable. Just get out of here. Do you know what I mean? This guy's weird. I don't want him coming in my house.
They had, when he first introduced it and he first goes into the apartment, they had one of the jokes that made me laugh for the first time when he's basically like, oh, what was it like? It was so like, I didn't think they'd get it clean after what happened. Like, what happened? Oh, they had a lot of cats.
Yeah, you'd expect them to go, there was a murder or something. Right.
Because that's what it looked like. It sounded like to me. It's like, oh, the old McNair, please.
Yeah. It's a good joke.
That was good.
Also, I do like the fact that he's presented as a weirdo from minute one. Like, there is no sort of, unlike other Jim Carrey projects, where he's presented as just being like, you're meant to find this guy charming or funny. No, you're meant to find him weird. You're meant to find him overbearing, and he is. And it's the perfect outlet for that kind of brand of comedy that Jim Carrey has, that kind of very high energy mugging. Because if you met someone like that in real life, you wouldn't think they're the coolest guy I've ever met. You'd think, who the fuck is this idiot? And can I get him away from me really quickly?
Yeah.
Exactly.
So it's great. It's also like there is, and I know, like, Stu, you mentioned that there is a darker cut of this out there, and there's a darker intention to it out there. And it gets referenced later in the film as well. But there is, it's almost like a horror setup in its pure premise. Of a stalker kind of latching themselves onto you. There's a film with Daniel Craig and Reese Fons called Enduring Love. That if you've ever seen that film, it's kind of like a comedy version of that, or more likely in the bit that's referenced later in one of the montages, Play Misty for Me, the Clint Eastwood film, where he has a DJ that gets stalked by somebody. You see a clip of it later in the film, and it's like, okay, this is a comedy take on what is in reality quite a horrifying premise. But it's also
just been brought to life in real life instead of a movie. So therefore, you even feel more of a threat with Chip because you definitely feel like there's just something not right with this guy.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting that they've done it because normally with these films, with stalker films, you have either, and again, Enduring Love did this, but you have either a man stalking a woman or a woman stalking a man. The fact that it's sort of done as a sort of a man stalking another man for nothing more than friendship is a slightly interesting take on it. It's also a kind of a weird morality play as well, in that the reason this happens is because he tries to bribe him.
Right.
To give him free cable. And it's like, you've broken the law, you've transgressed in some way, and this is going to bring horrible consequences to you. Yeah,
yeah. All because of Jack Black's advice. He goes, hey, look, why don't you bribe the cable guy? Give him $50. Man, I don't think I can handle that. And then he's like, man, totally do it. I do it all. Everybody does it all the time. You can't be proven or anything. Just go ahead and do it. So his Chip is leaving. He was dumb for the thing. He wasn't even going to come back or anything. But Steven was the one who ended up doing this transaction. That's like, hey, did you hear anything about doing some illegal cable? He goes, legal cable? What are you talking about? He's like, he goes, look. He goes, who is it? What's his name? I want to know.
Yeah.
He goes, I'm just jerking your chain. He goes, and then he winds up saying, then he winds up giving him the money to do the legal cable hookup, stuff like that. So if it was for that transaction, Steven would have been okay. His whole entire love life would be okay. He wouldn't have to initiate this whole entire thing that's going to be happening later on.
I wonder when he was going out the door, he still might have said something like, oh, maybe I'll show you that dish sometimes. And it still might have happened, even if he hadn't gave him the free cable. But no, I take your points with it. It's probably like repaying the debt. I've given you this, now you have to give me this. You know?
Right. And he's like, well, maybe one day I'll come out and I'll take you out on the wave of the information highway.
That's it. Yeah.
And then Stephen's like, okay, sure, not a problem. And he's just brushing the guy off, but he's taking it to heart. Right? So he's actually thinking, okay, well, yeah, now I have a friend. I have Stephen.
I don't know what I would do in that situation. Look, I am very, very British, right? I don't like being rude to people. So I would probably end up going, yeah, cool. Yeah, fine. Let's do it like that. But probably just never answer the guy's text or answer the door. You know,
Here's a question for you being in the US. The whole free cable thing, would that actually work? Was that a thing?
I know some people that did it with DirecTV where they actually took the cards. And they would actually give them free cable based on those car ID chips.
Right.
And it got to that point where they actually had to do something a little bit different with the DirecTV boxes and stuff. Right, okay. And then, but with the coaxial cables and stuff like that, or with that kind of cable company, I'm not 100% sure if they would actually do that or not. But it jeopardizing like your own job to satisfy one customer.
It feels like you'd be able to tell that someone was getting those channels that they weren't paying for. It doesn't seem like it'd be, it feels like it'd be a month, if it's a paid service, it feels like it'd be a monthly subscription type deal, not just, you know, one flat fee and you get the movie channels.
Well, I don't know. I had a guy come to my house recently to install a new satellite box because my box broke and I had to have a new one. And when he came in, he went, oh, I'm just going to give you the movie and the sports channels for free for 3 months. And I was like, okay, cool, thanks.
Yeah.
Luckily, I didn't become his friend, so it was fine.
Exactly. So now we have the next scene where Chip takes Steven to the satellite dish responsible for sending out television signals. Steven tells his problems with Robin to Chip, who advises him to admit his faults to Robin and invite her to watch Sleepless in Seattle. Steven takes Chip's advice and Robin agrees to watch the movie with him. So this is the thing that I don't get, because they're taking a ride on the information highway, which is kicking to the satellite. And he gives his whole entire run around and goes, you can play Mortal Kombat with a friend in China. Then you can surf the web here. You know what I'm saying? And then there's laying on the satellite dish. Like I'm thinking to myself, are people's cables messed up right now because they're laying on the satellite dish?
Yeah. How easy is it to access this thing? Why is it not all, like, you know, fenced off and padlocked and whatever? Yeah. Right.
Although it is remarkably prescient in that it's predicted quite a lot of what happened, like what has happened in the last 20 odd years is exactly what they were predicting.
Online shopping and that.
I mean, some of it was happening already, but the idea of being able to play Mortal Kombat with somebody in a foreign country is like, that's absolutely what happened. It's exactly, it came true. So it's remarkable that they did that. But yeah, I think. Also, what the hell has that got to do with cable television?
It doesn't. I think nothing. A big satellite dish, like, oh, look at this thing. The possibility you can do with this. That's how I saw it. But yeah, you're right. What's cable TV got to do with playing Mortal Kombat for someone in Vietnam? Nothing.
Also, it's nice, in the bits between these two scenes, there's a bit at his office where one of his co-workers is played by David Cross, who is Tobias Funke in Arrested Development and various other things, crops up as I was like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
David Cross, there's a lot of people in this that were much more famous later.
Actually, no, these aren't even cameos, like you said. It's just people just in their early careers.
Mm.
That's pretty cool that Ben Stiller was able to get them at this lower pay rate as well and give them jobs to do.
Definitely.
So that's something I appreciate with Ben Stiller, with giving these actors, you know, a chance to actually shine a little bit, and maybe somebody will actually pick them up in the future to be able to do the things they're doing now. So I do appreciate that what Ben Stiller did for them. But yeah, I just thought that this whole entire thing with the satellite dish and everything was a little off center to me, because of the fact of, like, what does Mortal Kombat have to do with anything? I get the fact that it's satellite signals, people can actually connect with each other and stuff like that by watching TV. But not in the sense of playing a video game during this era.
No,
even though I really like the fact that we're able to do that now, and they kind of predicted it.
Yeah, that's cool.
But yeah, they're just sitting down, laying down on the satellite dish, and this is the scene where basically him and Steven basically have a connection together, and I don't know why he's even opening up to this dude. The guy just picked you up in his van out of the, and the way that Steven's like just waving at him in the window like Kevin McAllister, it's like, yeah, okay, I'll go with you. I'm like, dude, you don't even know this guy, but you're gonna go sit on a satellite dish and open up to him about your relationship with Robin.
There's a lot of his own fault. He's almost like he's encouraging him. He could have shot this shit down immediately, like when he like honked the horn. Like, oh, Steve, he could have just ignored him, and none of this would have happened.
It happens as well in the office scenes when his boss, like, oh, you know, here are you and Robin having. He's like, oh yeah, and he tells his boss about it. It's like, why are people so open about their relationship troubles? If somebody at my work came up to me and, oh, how's your relationship? I'd be like, none of your fucking business. That's how it is. And if you ask again, I'll take you to HR.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just like one of those things like, well, I can't talk to my friends about my relationships or anything, so I'm going to talk to somebody else about my relationship that don't even know me because my friends know me. But,
yeah, that's true. Yeah. You get impartial more objective advice from someone that doesn't know you, yeah, I suppose.
But still, breaking it down to this guy, he's like, well, he gives him a Jerry Springer quote.
Yeah.
He goes, oh, that's very unlikeful. Where did you get that from? It was on Jerry Springer. Thank you. It was on Jerry Springer.
Yeah, it's fine. Other...
yeah, if somebody gave me a Jerry Springer quote as life advice, I'd be like, I don't need to take life advice from you.
Yeah.
And he also tells Steven that he doesn't listen to Robin, doesn't appreciate her or anything. And maybe all he cares about is his own self rather than her.
Which is kind of true.
Right. So it's like, okay, you got an objective opinion from him. So it's like, okay, well, I guess I'll follow this guy's advice and see what happens.
It's very manipulative what he's doing, though, because when he's saying all that to Robin, he doesn't mean it. He's just doing it to try and win her back. Like, oh, you know, I'm just going to cook myself some dinner and sleep this and see how it's on. He was like, oh, I love that movie. Why don't you come over and watch it? I was like, I know what you're doing. Like, so he doesn't mean any of that shit he's saying. He's just manipulating her.
Right, because Chip even says, you know, Steven's hair is going to be on, so there's a good chance that you might be able to get back with her.
Exactly. So,
all women love it, apparently. All women. Every woman loves Sleeps in Seattle.
Which I asked my wife, I said, do you like Sleeps in Seattle? She said, no. I'm like, okay, well, you're not.
Yeah.
I asked my partner, do you like Sleeps in Seattle? It's all right. it's fine.
Well, this movie lied to me.
I've never seen it, so it's not right. in my wheelhouse particularly.
Yeah.
But then you get the coffee shop scene where he actually tells Robin that same quote from Jerry Springer. And it works. And he even walks away. He's like, she goes, oh, well, maybe I'll see you around. He goes, yeah, whatever. And he just walks off.
Yeah. And again, this is what really confused me. They've split up. Why are they meeting up? Why are they hanging out? I was like, have you actually split up? Like, I don't understand what's happened here.
Yeah, it's unclear.
Yeah.
It's never really fully explained what their situation is. I mean, later on in the film, obviously, she goes on a date. But, that's presented very strangely.
Yeah, I agree. Looking back at it now as like an adult, it's like, why are you even here? You guys are supposed to be on a break, but you're still sitting next to each other. Nonetheless, Steven actually persuaded her. I was like, look, I have something I need to tell you, and I need to get it off my chest. I know that we're on a break. Can you meet me at the coffee house?
And that thing is, I'm going to make dinner for myself and watch Clips in Seattle. Very important piece of information.
Yeah. He made it about himself rather than her.
Yeah, yeah.
He goes, maybe you should come by and just take a look at the new apartment whenever you have a chance. He goes, what else are you going to do? Oh, I'm just going to go in and cook myself some dinner and, you know, watch Sleepless in Seattle. And it's on HBO right now.
Yeah.
Okay, well, maybe I might come by. I like Sleepless in Seattle. And so that trick worked. So everything about him rolling off the fact that he's talking about himself and also not feeling bad about anything worked. And then I wish they would actually play it off where now Steven has like a little bit of like an ego about him.
Yeah.
Because remember when he goes, yeah, whatever. I wish that they would actually play that off a little bit more. Because there was like, it felt like there was something there that they could have done more with.
Yeah.
What he should have said is, I'm going to cook dinner for myself and watch Sleepless in Seattle. And she should have said, "Oh, well, maybe I'll come by." And then he should have said, "No, didn't you hear me? I forgot plans."
Right.
Yeah.
I'm making dinner for myself and watching papers in Seattle. You're not invited.
Yeah, exactly.
Dinner for one.
At that moment, she'll be feeling guilty for letting him watch this movie by himself. Maybe she'd be actually like, "You know what? Maybe I should swing by Stevens anyways, even though he says he's by himself. Maybe I should go ahead and be with him."
Perhaps.
So that could actually work too. Mm. So now we actually have Chip. Chip begins acting more suspiciously, running into Steven and his friends at the gym at the YMCA and leaving several messages on Steven's answering machine.
Oh, geez.
When Robin arrives to watch the movie, the cable is out due to Chip, who intentionally sabotaged Steven's cable. Chip fixes the cable under the condition that they hang out again, to which Steven agrees. So you're about to be playing basketball with your friends. Then all of a sudden your cable guy just happens to be in the same area as you are. Because, wow, what a coincidence. You guys are here. Because I didn't think that you guys work out here too. And then he's doing the sprints, going back and forth, trying to do the warm ups. And he goes, "I'm going to be on Steven's team."
It's very funny, the warm-ups, just the back and forth running is very, very funny. That really stuck in my memory. I don't know if anybody else thought this, but I was watching, I was like, "Oh, Jim Carrey's in very good shape in this."
Yeah, I thought that, yeah.
Size of him.
But like this bit, you can forgive, all right, Stephen went out for like a man date with him to go with the dish, or like, whatever, okay. But like after this bit, he should have had like absolutely nothing to do with him. He's acting like a weirdo. He hurts Jack Black, like completely ruins their game. He starts like, "Oh, this isn't the way friends talk to each other." At this point, I'd be checking out, "Now, fuck this. Please just leave me alone. You're really, really weird and I don't like this." Because then further on, when Robin comes around and the cable goes out, he goes, "Oh, a friend of mine, he's the cable guy." And I'm like, "You've just referred to him as a friend." So I think Steven's just as guilty. He's encouraging him, right? And he really shouldn't be.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. And then also, too, like, when they start playing the basketball game, he goes, "Oh, we're playing prison rules. Okay." So... yeah. He winds up knocking down a couple of Steven's friends. He jumps on the back of Jack Black.
Yeah.
And slams, dunks the basketball and makes the glass break and ruins the whole entire game for everybody.
Yeah. Not to mention the criminal damage, and you'll probably have to pay it, replace that glass.
Oh, yeah, you definitely will. How easy is that to do? Because it seems to happen in films quite a lot.
What, smashing the glass?
People slam, dunk, and smash the backboard. I imagine it's not made of glass. It's made of some sort of hard plastic, so I don't suppose it's going to shatter that easily.
No, but I think that also too that the gym would not have glass.
Yeah,
well, yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah, it's going to be.
Yeah, they would actually have just regular wooden for the backboard or something like that. Not something that's glass. Because things like this, these are teenagers would probably go ahead and play out there too. So I don't think that they would go ahead and have a piece of glass or anything like that for them to play.
So if the second you hit that with an errant ball that doesn't go into the hoop and just hits the backboard, it's going to smash.
Yeah.
Right.
It's glass. It's not going to withstand being pummeled. Yeah, it seems odd. Also, then he falls in the glass, which looked exceptionally painful.
And apparently the stunt guy who did this stunt got cut to shit. As he was doing it, all the glass like fell on him, went in his eyes and everything. So not good.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Then he tells Rick, he goes, "Thanks for the lift, Rick." And
being a prick.
Yeah, he's a dick.
Yeah.
You know, and I just didn't really care for that setup. But also, too, I want to go back on something real quick. Is while they're watching, while Robin and them are watching Sleepless in Seattle, there you have Chip, who is being who's watching Sleepless in Seattle in his van, as if he's watching it with Steven and his girlfriend, but and then he also flashes back to childhood where his mother is going to happy hour because she wants to get Chip a brother.
So sad.
And she leaves him in front of the TV and calls it the babysitter. It gives us a backstory of Chip being neglected and it's supposed to make us care about Chip.
But I think it works. There's a reason why he's not just a creepy weirdo for the sake of creepy weirdo. He's a severely neglected child with mental health issues. I was like, right, yeah, that makes sense.
They hinted at it earlier when they were talking about his lisp and where his lisp comes from. And there's always these hints of this very, very dark backstory that you kind of partially explore, but not really.
Hit him or something.
It was some inference. His dad kicked him in the face with steel-toe cap boots on.
That's the
inference as to why he has the lisp. And then he has to go for reconstructive surgery. So there is... Yeah, there are these hints. I mean, it's always this thing with this kind of unreliable narrator character is how much of this can you actually believe? Yeah. He's playing a mentally unwell person that you don't know how much of this is actually supposed to be true. But it's in that flashback sequence where you get the clip of Play Misty for Me with Clint Eastwood. Mm. And so it's kind of almost like seeding his behavior as a child from all of this stuff that he's seen. That's why it is the bad babysitter of the TV. It's like, yes, the TV will look after you, but it depends what you're watching. And it can very much influence your behavior.
And he's watching every single thing he can get his hands on because there's no parental guidance or anything like that. Because, Mom, I thought you were going to bring me home a brother. He goes, that's why I'm going out, to get you a little brother.
Yeah, happy.
Yeah.
Horrible. Mr. Babysitter will keep you company. I'm like, man, you're such a... If there's like a punchable face in this movie, it would be her.
Yeah. In a sense.
It's very irresponsible.
But even Chip, I would actually have to put as like a punchable face in this movie as well because of how he acts and stuff too, especially towards Steven's friends.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, and then also too, during that whole entire thing with Sleepless in Seattle with Robin and him watching it together, he talks about his boss.
Oh, yeah. I can see where it's going immediately. Like, even as a kid, when he like moved all his furniture around, I was like, why have you done that? Like, you've obviously done something to his house. And then, when he starts talking about his boss, I'm like, this is going to come back, isn't it? This is going to come back. And sure enough.
It comes back tenfold later on.
Yeah.
So...
The guy who played the boss, every time he spoke, I looked at him, I was like, I recognize your face and I recognize your voice. And I looked him up and there was nothing. I think I'm getting him confused with somebody else, but he sounded, in particular, his voice sounded so familiar. And I couldn't place it.
Yeah, same.
But then we also have Steven's cable goes out.
Yeah.
And so he goes, well, it's okay. It's going to be fine. Just I'm going to call my friend. And, he's a cable guy. I have his pager. Well, I'll just go and call him. And at this point, he's actually avoiding Chip altogether. He doesn't want to return his calls. Yeah. He doesn't want to do anything or anything like that. But he's going to still page this guy. And even Chip says it. He goes, and returning my phone calls is the way to go. Wow. And then and he also has Steven's cable.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
In his hands. And he goes, my cable's out. He goes, weird. I don't know what you're talking about. And so he goes, can you fix it? He goes, yeah, I can fix it if we go out tomorrow. He goes, okay, fine, whatever. Robin's here. Starts looking at me.
Yeah. She's pretty. Yeah, it just flicks a switch and it comes back on. I was like, oh, for fuck's sake. He's like, what's that for? When I was just for effect. Pretty good.
I really love his lines, though, who's told you about legal cable? I'll juice you up. I'd really love the quotes that he has in this movie as well.
I don't think it's necessarily the most quotable film in the world, as you said earlier, but it is funny. Like it does have some very good lines. There is a keen eye for comedy here, and it's a keen eye for dark comedy, which I appreciate, and I think is why it's because it's slightly more adult. And you were right, Stu, I did check, it was a 12 in the UK. Because it's more adult, it's aged better and it maintains that level of humor.
Yeah. And it's not being mean. You know, like in the Ace Ventura,
it's not mean.
And even if he's being mean to Steven, Steven kind of deserves it anyway, because at times he's being a bit of a douche.
But it's mean. It's mean in a way that makes sense to the characters. It's not punching down on anyone. So Ace Ventura has like big problems with punching down on trans people, on various other people. This doesn't do that. It's not taking the piss. And in fact, even in the way that it's, obviously it's a stalker character, so it's treating mental illness in a slightly extreme way. It's still not unkind. It's still not looking at him, isn't he a fucking weirdo? It's
right. Presenting it's not like he's degrading anybody.
Yeah. No, and he's not necessarily being degraded, and he has sort of a broad sort of redemption arc as well, although not quite, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
But then we get this other thing too now, where Chip takes Steven to medieval times, where Chip arranges them to do the battle arena, referencing Star Trek episode Among Time. Chip behaves aggressively, nearly killing Steven, who eventually beats him in combat. But yeah, they go to medieval times, and this actually makes me want to go to medieval times because of this.
Does medieval times actually exist?
Apparently it does. from what I on a
because
like a
again, this is the thing that I saw as a child, watching an American film and thought, oh, that must be something that they have in all American cities. There must be one on every street corner. And I've been to America a few times, and I've never seen one. But do they actually exist?
Yeah, Medieval Times does exist.
We've been to something similar, Smith. Like, for my 30th birthday, we went to that one. Yeah, in London, near where the Tower of London was, there was a place called, the Medieval Banquet, it was called.
Yeah, so you get
King Henry VIII coming around singing, you have wenches as waitresses. You're not allowed to call them, miss or whatever. You have to call them a wench. Like, wench, I want another drink.
I felt very uncomfortable.
But there was no jousting. It was just Henry VIII singing.
Yeah, does Medieval Times in the States have, like, jousting and horse riding and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, they have the jousting and stuff like that. They have, and also you're not allowed to even have utensils to actually eat with, so you actually do have to eat with your hands.
No, that joke was great. It's like they didn't have utensils, but they had jugs of Pepsi. He's like, dude, I got a lot of tables.
Yeah, Janine Garofalo is fantastic in the brief minutes that she's on screen. Mm. She's the very first second she walks in, looking really like she can't be fucked to be there, and doing all of the medieval talk is so well done. She is genius in everything she's in, but like in this in particular, it's like, that is very funny.
Right? You want me to fetch you a fresh glass from the pub?
Yeah,
and. Then she also says, do we have any utensils? We do not have any utensils at Medieval Times. We eat with our hands. Because, but there's no so you have Pepsi, but no utensils. And then, of course, she winds up saying, look, dude, this is my job. I can't help what you have and don't have.
Yeah,
it's really good.
But she is very believable. I have to agree with you, Smith, on this. Like, she's very believable as a waitress because that's exactly how a waitress at Medieval Times would be like if you got on her nerves,
Yeah, they're not going to be humoring your bullshit.
I think it would wear off very quickly working there. You're like, the fuck this place.
I think it would wear off very quickly going there. I've always wanted to go there ever since I saw this film. But I think when I got there, I'd be like, yay. And then in about 5 minutes, I'd be like, sorry, what, you're going to have to eat my hands? Yeah. No, I'm not. I won't be doing that. I'm sorry. No.
Jim says he goes there twice a week. Why does he go in twice a week?
He's probably learning how to joust with Steven this whole time. Yeah, he's okay, well, I need to perform my jousting. I need to get that down pat. You're my preferred customer, so therefore I want to have this done.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. Yeah. So he probably exists for freeze. He's a preferred customer.
Yeah. I enjoyed the Silence of the Lambs bit with the chicken skin on the face.
Silence of the Lambs.
Hello, Clarice. It does look like he is trying not to laugh at that.
Yeah, I spotted that. Like,
Matthew Broderick, they're both trying not to laugh at that. And it's like, that's very, very good. I like the
fact that is true, though. But yeah, if you see how the camera's cut to Matthew Broderick.
Yeah.
Off to the side, you can tell that he's trying not to break character, but it's hard.
Yeah. Very, very, very well done.
But then, of course, they get called. Chip Douglas and Stephen Koufax, you are needed to the front. And he goes, oh.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
And I like how Chip is all like excited, like he was not expecting it or anything. Yeah. It's time for us to do battle. We need to go down there. And then he goes, is this normal? No, not normal at all. He's my, the king is actually my preferred customer.
Yeah. Specifically requested to do this.
And then the king is like, look, just get on the damn horse, okay?
It is a health and safety nightmare.
Yeah.
The king, of course, played by Andy Dick, who is normally fairly insufferable. But in this is quite funny as well. Like, it's very well done. I do like the fight where he throws the sand in his face. I'm blinded. Yeah, yeah. It's so well done. It's so funny. And then, obviously, they did the big Star Trek music and they kind of.
And he slashes at him as well. He's like, you could have killed him.
That is a health and safety nightmare.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? Those instruments even should be like, blunt. Is it safe? Absolutely not. But he even realizes how dangerous it is once his clothes starts getting, once that sword winds up slicing a part of his clothes. It's okay. I could die.
I don't know why he didn't just go back to the table.
Because even at the beginning of this, right, guys, it's like, are they going to train us how to do it? No, you're not going to be training. This is the training.
So I mean, like health and safety nightmare, that would never happen. I assume in medieval times that does not happen generally, as people are not allowed to get up there and take part.
No, professionals actually do this, not the audience.
Yeah.
Otherwise, that's well,
makes me want to go slightly. Makes me want to go slightly less.
Could you imagine the ER being crowded with people and somebody winds up losing an arm or whatever? It's like, another fucking night over a fucking medieval times.
Yeah. All dressed in costume, everything.
Oh, here we go. Medieval times, they've let the public take a go again.
Yeah.
Like, medieval times? Yeah. Yeah, we know. Over here. There's just a line for medieval people who eat at medieval times. Yeah. But yeah, I thought that scene was actually pretty funny. I still laugh at it every single time with the Silence of the Lambs bit. I do wind up saying Silence of the Lambs, and I always wind up doing Hello Clarice. I always do those two lines just to try and get some laughs out of my friends, just to see what their responses, just to do random shit to them.
Yeah.
I wouldn't put your skin all over my face though. That'd be very greasy and horrible.
Yeah.
When they arrive,
eat the skin. So just eat the skin. Come on, don't be a wimp.
Best bit.
So now we're getting into this other part now, where it's even more creepier. Because at this time and everything, you're thinking, okay, that's going to be okay with Steven and him kind of being friends because they kind of bonded with that whole entire, medieval times type of thing. To where maybe his guard will be down a little bit. This is you think that you can actually drop your guard a little bit. He does something else off center. And after he gets done popping his back there and everything in Steven's home, Chip reveals that he installed an expensive home theater system in his living room. Chip and Steven later host a party, and with Chip's help, Steven sleeps with Heather, who later Chip reveals is a prostitute, and Steven throws Chip out.
See, I don't know why he didn't throw Chip out once he saw it. He'd installed all that entertainment system. It's like, what, you've got access to my house? I would just get the fuck out immediately. Like, even then, he's still entertaining this guy's behavior. It's like, why? He's been in your house.
You get out while I go and change all the locks.
Yeah.
Right? I'm going to call a locksmith. How about that?
Yeah. This was the film that introduced me to the song by Jefferson Airplane. I'd never heard it before this film, and I love that song.
Same here. I never heard it either up until that point either.
Yeah. And I heard it, I was like, must go and seek that out. And I heard the original, and now it's like, it's on my playlist. It's like, it's in rotation. It's a great piece of music.
It is a good song.
And Jim Carrey's not a bad singer either. He does a fair, like, I mean, he's doing a weird sort of vibrato thing with his voice, but it's still very, it's still very well performed.
Well, yeah, he's still keeping within the whole entire beat and rhythm of the song.
Yeah, he's not got a bad singing voice.
In the mask, he sings as well. So when he's singing, my name is Cuban Pete, and the king of the rum.
Chicky boom, chicky.
Yeah, yeah. And he's got a good voice then as well. He's a good dancer. He's a good singer. So yeah, very talented.
Also, with it,
go on. Go on, Smith. I'm sorry.
No, you crack on.
Okay, so remember whenever he tells him, because did you get this? How did you get in my house? I had a key. And he goes, how else do you think I was going to get this in? So he's like, look, I cannot accept this. Right? Because he's like, look, I cannot accept this or anything. This is way too expensive for me. I'm not going to accept this entertainment center. Yep. You're going to have to take this back. He goes, okay, well, it was for our preferred customer. So I'm going to have to get him to take it back. Is it okay if we go ahead and let it stay here for a couple of days until I can get the person to take it back? And so he's like, okay, not a problem. I just want this shit out. I don't care. I'll do anything just to get this, get rid of it. Yeah. And so while that's happening, he calls Robin. Robin's going to go out on a date and he goes, well, I thought you said that we were going to be seeing other people. And she's like, well, we did agree to have some time away from each other and stuff. Mm. So then this actually plays into the narrative of, you know, Chip's like, well, let's go on ahead. Let's tear the cherry off that and home, that entertainment center.
Yeah.
And so he's like, we're going to have a party. And he goes, look, I don't really want a party. He goes, we're going to have a party. And so they want, so he goes, and I know some people, and there's going to, but there's going to be some butts, some big ones. But
it's, I mean, she's being, Robin is being very unreasonable.
Yes.
Like, it's very like, I love that she's going on a date. I love you, but I've got to go by. It's like, what, sorry, what are you doing? That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah,
like,
what if the date went really well and she liked the guy she went on the date with? How's that going
to
work?
She's just keeping him hanging on until she decided whether or not she wants to have sex with somebody else. The other thing I thought watching this whole sequence is that if you live in an apartment block, you should not be allowed to have your own home karaoke system.
Oh, no.
No, there should be a law.
Fucking menace. Like, I would, I was in the next apartment over, and I was like, I will come around there with a baseball bat, and I will beat you all to death very slowly if you don't stop singing. It is one in the goddamn morning.
And all the guests there, apart from Jack Black, are Chip's friends. Like, why is Steven letting all these strange people he's never met into his home for a party?
And one,
that's one of the issues that I have with it.
Woman.
Yeah. It's like you have all these old people that 70 or 80 years old dancing, and then you have this one female that just stands out by herself.
Yeah.
It does not make any sense to me at all.
Yeah, the apartment's weird as well. She's like standing on like a little bit with a like a banister.
Yeah, like the banister.
It's in the living room. What is, who has that?
It's not even, not only that, dude, but it's not even that big of an apartment to where they're trying to make the apartment look bigger than what it is.
He's got multi-tiered floors in one room. Is that, what is that? Very strange. And then immediately she's like, oh, should we go in the other room? He's like, yep. Well, that didn't take long.
No, because think of it like this. He's like, well, Robin's moving on. You might as well move on too. So
kind of has a point.
Yeah.
But then, but then we find out this whole thing was a setup. And like, oh, you know, so yeah.
But then you also have this other thing with Rick and Steven. He goes, well, maybe I should go on ahead and be friends with my cable guy.
Mm.
And so he feels a little neglected and stuff, but he also says he's been blowing them off. But I'm like, blowing who else off? Because you're like his only friend that he has. I wanted to see more of a setup with Jack Black and the and his friends to make us feel like he's actually alienating his friends.
Yeah.
Because I don't see it where, you know, Steven is actually blowing off his friends at all. I don't even see them even reaching out to them, him at all to hang out.
It's not clear how many friends he has outside of Jack Black.
Basketball friends might not have been his friends. They might have been Jack Black's friends.
Well, yeah. And then Jack Black is used as sort of a kind of like a representative of all his friends, I would assume, is how I read it. This is just an example. And he's there to provide a function in the third act plot, and then he disappears for the rest of the film.
Right. It's like, okay, you're only set up for like three scenes, and that's it.
Yep.
So his shooting schedule is pretty easy. But yeah, I just, and then of course, once he sleeps with the prostitute, you have Chip who takes a Polaroid picture of him for blackmail.
Which is a bit premeditated. Like, why did he do that? Or did he just know Steven's going to get angry when he finds out this girl's not legit?
I think it's for collateral, just in case if anything down.
Yeah, fine.
He has something over Steven. He goes, oh, that's a good one. And and then, but I do like the whole entire Jefferson Airplane bit, Smith, though, too. It's funny. It's comical, especially about how he actually lets out the long verse of love and doing that with his throat. Yeah. Then just wide-eyed, baby, and then starts, you know, with a big, huge eyeballs popping up out of his skull. That was hilarious. Yeah. The whole bit was hilarious. I didn't feel like it went on too long. I felt like, you know, this is exactly what karaoke thing, what a karaoke thing is, you know?
Mm. Yeah. Completely.
But then we get into the whole entire thing next day where basically goes, man, Steven wakes up and goes, man, that was great. He goes, this is exactly what I needed. He goes, man, where did Heather go? Oh, she left about 30 minutes ago. He goes, it's okay. You get me next time. He goes, what do you mean you get me next time? He goes, you know, I pay for you. You pay for me, you know. And he's over there making him scrambled eggs, bacon, and stuff like that. And then that's when they have that conversation. He's like, look, I want you out. Mm. At this point, whenever he finds out Heather's a prostitute, he goes, look, she's clean, man. I just checked her out like last week.
Yeah, and I'm fine.
And I'm fine. No drips.
Oh, it's taken this long now for him to go, I've had enough. Just get out, you know. But understandably, I would be furious if I was Steve.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You know? I wouldn't be okay if someone tried to hook me up with a prostitute and try to make me move on from my girlfriend that I had where I don't have to pay for sex or anything.
Yeah.
That would piss me off, though, too.
Yeah.
And then he goes, come on, Steven. I made you some scrambled eggs. I made some breakfast, and this is how you're going to do me? He goes, come on, Steven. Come on. So he winds up shutting the door, and then, of course, we get that scene now where Robin's out on a date. And Chip tracks down Robin, who is on a date with another man, which is Owen Wilson, who's a douchebag. Yeah. That's actually...
So I remembered Owen Wilson being in the film, weirdly. I think it's the first thing I probably ever saw Owen Wilson in. And I also... My partner made the observation that he's weirdly ageless.
Yeah.
Like, you look at Owen Wilson in the film, and he looks exactly the same as he does now. And I looked it up. In this film, he was about 28.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he's younger considerably than I am now. But he looks older. He looks like he could be in his mid-30s. But he now still looks like he could be in his mid-30s.
Yep.
Exactly. Yep. The dude does not age at all.
No, but he always plays
the same character in every movie.
Yeah. Wow. Oh, what's going on with the chicken?
Yeah. It's really obsessed with that chicken.
He's really obsessed with that flipping chicken. It's...
Yeah.
So what do you do? What do you... Hold that pen for 1 minute. I really
want
to know what you do.
He asks, then he goes, yeah, I've got to the toilet. Why did he ask?
And you can definitely tell that Robin's not enjoying the date. So even if, let's say, for instance, that Chip doesn't show up, there's a chance that it would be good for Steven because of the fact the guy's a douche.
Yeah.
You wouldn't have to worry about that.
I wonder if this scene would have been better if Owen Wilson was actually a nice guy and she was having a nice date, and then Chip beats the shit out of him. You know,
well, you have to make him a dickhead, because otherwise, it's weird, right? You sort of make him a dickhead, so it's funny that Chip beats him up, but Chip is still not being presented as a good guy.
Yeah,
you're still meant to think that he's going too far and he's weird, but it has to be done for comedy. So you can't have him be just like a super nice guy that gets beaten up, because that's not funny.
Yeah, that's mean.
That's mean. So he has to be a dick. He has to sort of have it coming. Not that I think anybody has it coming to be physically assaulted just because they've been a bit rude to wait staff. I mean, don't be rude to wait staff.
But he was probably going to beat him up even if he was a nice guy. That was the whole point. He wanted him to stay away from Robin.
Right, just to go on ahead and put Steven back on the map to where him and Steven can be friends again. So he was trying to look out for his own interest, not Steven's. He was just trying to beat up this guy so the way she would take him back, and therefore he can be on Steven's good graces.
Exactly.
This is all it was. But I like how Chip walks in there. He looks like the Unabomber, but also he looks like Freddie Mercury.
Yeah, I thought Freddie Mercury.
Freddie Mercury.
So could you imagine, like, if you had to actually ID this guy, it's like, what does he look like? Well, he looks like Freddie Mercury.
Yeah.
Yeah. When you get the news report later on, the sketch artist impression is really funny. Steven's looking at it like, pretty good.
Because even Steven's like, is that Chip or is it not Chip?
Yeah,
because
exactly.
The way he looks. He's like, it doesn't matter. But I also like how he winds up taking basically you have Chip. He winds up taking the guy who's actually, you know, puts the water on for people and gives them shampoo, you know, soap and stuff for their hands. And he gives him like $100 and tells him to go take a break.
Yep.
And then he beats the snot out of him.
Yeah. Oh, I think you could do that.
Well, if I said I think you could
bribe somebody with $100. I think you get $100. Give me 5 minutes. Right, they probably would.
Right, I'm sure that they don't get paid much. It's like, you know what I mean? So it's like, I'll take $100. This is my payday.
They're definitely on minimum wage.
Yeah. Not only that, but I don't even have to touch this guy. I don't have to touch his hands. I don't have to put on the water or anything.
That's true.
I'd be worried if I was a bathroom attendant. If somebody tried to give me $100, I'd be very worried what it was they wanted me to do. And if it turned out it was just to go outside, I'd be like, absolutely. I thought this was going to get weird quick.
Right?
And I'd have let it.
I also like it. So now you have this scene set up where now he's beating the crap out of Owen Wilson, smashes him up against the stalls, and after that he ends up pushing him over to where the blow dryer. And he puts his lips onto the blow dryer.
Yeah.
That'd be horrible for so many reasons.
Yeah.
And then after that it shows him getting rushed to the ER.
Yeah. And we're told he can't speak anymore or something. God knows what he done. Busted his voice box or something.
That's what happens if you put a head right on somebody's.
Oh yeah, okay, that makes more sense now. Yeah.
So after that happens, later he upgrades Robin's cable. Chip upgrades Robin's cable, saying that it was on Steven, and Robin decides to get back together as a result. So installing illegal cable for your ex and acting like you're paying for it actually turns people on. Okay.
The funniest line of this movie happens during this scene for me. I couldn't stop laughing. Like, Chips tries to bond with Robin, and he says about, I asked someone to marry me, but, you know, we took some time out, but she's not with us anymore. I guess, whatever you do, don't go bungee jumping in Mexico. They don't have the same regulations. And I was dying with laughter at that scene.
Me too. He was talking about her, but instead he made it about him.
Yeah. That line, they just don't have the regulations. It's so funny. It's the bit where he's like crawling around in the air ducts, and then he kind of just drops down into the pantry and he almost falls on his ass. That is funny. He just kind of rescues it. It's very, very good.
Robin because he sees her birthmark, doesn't he?
He sees her birthmark, sneaks up to. Now, this is actually very creepy.
Yeah.
As well, it has like an Norman Bates kind of feel to it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, this dude's way off on edge here. I would have a problem if someone actually looked at my wife's birthmark if she had one, and someone was saying something like that.
It's things that people might have done in the 90s, perhaps when people felt more safe. I don't know. B, things that people, especially women, only do in films, which is let a strange man into your house. With absolutely no reason for him being there because he says he knows your boyfriend. That, like, if somebody knocked at my door and my partner was and said, Mike's arranged for this to happen. So, like, Smith's arranged for this to happen. Can I come in? She would be like, absolutely fucking not. First thing she'd do is close the door, call me to check that it was true. If it was true, then maybe, but it wouldn't be like, oh, yeah, sure, come in. Why don't you just kind of nosing around in my flat? I'm going to go somewhere else and just get changed.
Exactly, because that's actually how I felt too. I was like, well, don't you want to call your ex-boyfriend who supposedly paid for your cable to make sure that this what he's saying is actually true? Because you don't know Chip. All he did was poke his eyes at you for like 5 seconds, so you don't even know this guy.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Or anything.
Is it sort of also making making a bit of commentary about American sort of entertainment culture? In that, you know, giving somebody free cable at the time is considered this exceptionally romantic gesture. And, oh, that's brilliant. That's wonderful. It's like, really? I mean, it's like in the modern equivalent of getting somebody a Netflix subscription as a present.
Yeah. Oh, you shouldn't have.
Cheers. That's all right. I will go out with you. You've bought me Netflix.
Yeah.
Well, Well, what sucks now is you can't even share the same account or anything with the person that you're on Netflix with. So therefore, forget about that.
Yep.
But also, too, this also brings me back to my high school days, right? Where, you know, you have MTV and you're thinking that this girl's going to hook up with you because you have MTV, because you get to watch a concert or something. It's like, what are you doing? Oh, I'm just watching MTV. If you want to, just come on over. You know, but it's equivalent to that. But I never knew someone that got hot and turned on for getting cable.
No.
Or anything. No.
It's my equivalent of ringing somebody up going, I've got Sky Television. When I was 13, like, if you want to come over and watch an episode of Star Trek The Next Generation, be my guest.
Steven tells Chip that they cannot be friends, which hurts Chip, which gets Chip on a series of vengeful acts. He gets Steven arrested for possession of stolen property, although Steven is released on bail.
Yeah, this scene didn't really make sense to me, right? He tells him, right, don't want to be your friend anymore, so this is the part we're going to get the sinister Chip. So Chip has spoken to his preferred cop friend to get Steven arrested. Like, but what evidence have you got? And who did you steal that from? Like, none of that's really clear. Who, where was the entertainment stuff from? How was it stolen? How has he proven Steven? I don't know. And also, surely that cop would have known that Chip gave it to him. I don't know. There's a lot of plot.
But as a preferred customer, you're just doing him a favor.
Oh, I see.
I'll give you free cable if you arrest this guy. Go on, go arrest this guy.
Right. It's like bribery. Instead of money, you get cable.
Yeah, okay. Fine.
Yeah.
Now it's making more sense.
The actor,
but the funny thing is, it also makes the cop look like an accomplice as well because he was there.
No, but I think he is. I think that's the point. The actor playing the cop is Charles Napier, who's been in loads of stuff since like the 1970s.
He's very recognizable.
Austin Powers as well, roughly around about this time. But he's been in. He started off in all the old Russ Meyer stuff in the 1970s, like Fast and Furious, all that kind of stuff. So he's had like this huge long career. I think he's dead now, but he was he's one of those people that I always saw in films around this time. It's like, oh, it's that guy from that thing that I saw.
Right. But I agree with Smith, with Stu, though, on this, though, too. Is like, you know, it's like the cop is there inside the place. He also knows that he at the party as well. He's like, how the hell do I know that this is stolen stuff? Unless Steven winds up admittedly telling Chip himself that it was stolen.
Yeah.
That'll be the only way.
I think that the cop knows that it's not stolen. It's not stolen. I think it's been given to Chip, who gives it to Matthew Broderick, and he's just saying to the cop, pretending this is stolen, I'm telling you this is stolen.
Oh, okay.
It's a setup. It's not stolen.
But what makes me interested, it takes a little while until Stephen loses his job. You think at this point, the cop's busted in and arresting Stephen. That'd be enough for them to be like, right, well, you're fired. Or you're an extended leave absence until you're investigated.
Well, not until you're convicted. You can't fire someone if they're under suspicion. That's an employment tribunal waiting to happen.
Don't know. Doesn't look very good, though, when a cop storm your office and arrest you in front of everyone.
Yeah, the time it happened to me, I mean, oh, no, I've said that.
Yeah, he also has to stay at county lockup.
Yeah.
That's also another thing that happens.
Horrible.
And while this is going on, Chip comes and visits him in jail, saying that he's his lawyer. His parents also wanted his own Steven, too. So he's like, look, why did you take such extravagant gifts? And he goes, I don't know. I wish I didn't. I wish I didn't take these extravagant gifts or anything. But here I am. I'm stuck in this. Can you get me out of it? Well, we can't put you out on bail because of the fact that it's late at night now. So therefore, you have to stay at night in county. And so you're with all these other criminals and you're in there for a crime that you actually didn't commit. You were innocent because your friend said that there was actually someone that gave it to you.
Mm.
So that's pretty crappy. And then here comes Chip acting like his lawyer. He goes, oh, Stevie. And he puts his chest to the to the glass.
Midnight
and then
Express.
All the other inmates are over there making kissy eyes at him, eye contact at him.
Yeah, I remember that scene very well. It's very funny.
Oh, Billy.
Yeah.
And then after he gets bailed out, that's actually the next day. I wish they would actually show how many days later.
Yeah.
With this.
And then there's no payoff. It never comes back round again that he got arrested.
No.
No,
it doesn't really need to, because this is one of those 90s comedy films that's pretty kind of A to B to C, right? It's got quite a clean, straightforward narrative. You put stuff in there just to be funny. You put it in there just to show escalation. Not everything needs to be resolved.
Yeah, fair enough.
Also, I mean, assuming what happens is at the end, they work out that it's all just not true and it all just gets swept under the carpet.
Yeah, trial just gets thrown out. Never happens.
Right, exactly. So it doesn't need to actually come full circle or anything. Yeah. It is what it is. It's just the next couple of days or whatever. Now, we actually have, during a dinner with Steven's family and Robin, Steven is horrified to see Chip in attendance. Steven tells him to leave, but Chip tells him to play along or he will show everyone the picture of Steven with that prostitute.
Now, this doesn't make any sense. Why did Robin invite Chip to this dinner? Why? Yeah. Doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
And why would the parents go along with it? Why would the rest of the family go along with it? Why would they let this person they've never met, who is dressed suspiciously like Mr. Rogers, into their house?
No, more like Norman Bates.
Yeah. Norman Bates by way of Mr. Rogers is the cardigan.
Yeah.
Right. But yeah, I thought that's too Smith. I'm like, why would these parents go with them?
What?
And they don't even know him, but they're defending him, especially with everything that that's going.
He's also weird. He's behaving weirdly. It's almost like they're all being held hostage by this escaped psychiatric patient who's come into their home. They're like, we all have to play along or he might kill us all.
Yeah. Right.
He's clearly unhinged.
But what about for you, Stu? What do you think?
All of this is so cringe. It's probably the scene I hate the most in this movie. I'm just like, I've got my head in my hands and he's making him play Porno Password. I'm like, no, stop. And then I notice throughout all this, Bob Odenkirk is in this. Oh, shit, it's Bob Odenkirk. Yeah. It's his brother.
Odenkirk,
sorry.
Yeah, Better Call Saul. But I didn't remember he was in this at all. I saw him on the credits. I was like, oh, shit. Bob Odenkirk's in this film. The Porno Password thing, right? I wouldn't play that game with my parents. I wouldn't play that game in the same city as my parents.
No.
I wouldn't want them anywhere near me if I was playing that game. That is not a game that I would play. I wouldn't play that game with friends. It's weird. It's a weird game. And if a stranger in your home who you've only met that day suggests it, you just tell that person politely to leave.
Yeah, I don't know why they all go along with this and think it's a great idea.
Right, and then you know you have that thing because the password is foreskin, and then he keeps on getting weirder and weirder. He goes, "Grab him, showed me a picture of her, showed me her birthmark."
Yeah.
So he winds up punching him, rightfully so.
Absolutely, long time coming.
But here's the thing: even if he had the picture of Heather, the prostitute, here's the thing. Robin went on a date with some other random guy.
And that picture is not that incriminating. It's just him being like that. It's not like there's a picture of them both naked in a bed. He could have just said, oh, we were dancing at the party. He could have just said something like that.
Right.
But yeah, you're right. She went on a date. It was like, well, you've got no grounds to be angry whatsoever.
Yeah.
And they're supposed to be on a break, so there's... so...
Regardless. It's a very odd... So I love the fact it's found out, just don't be such a stick in the mud. It's like, no, why do you want to say nipple in front of your son?
Right?
It's weird. Don't be doing
it. He keeps on saying, like, center. And then he said breast. And then...
penis.
I wouldn't want to play... I mean, also, Robin's there. If they're on a break, why is Robin going for dinner with him and his family?
They've got back together at this point.
Because
shortly before that, that's when he tells Chip a couple of scenes ago, look, I'm back with Robin now. I don't want to be your friend anymore. Go away.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
Yeah.
And he even tells, I like how he also breaks it down to him, too. He's like, look, I don't have any more room for friends. And I like how Chip is like, what do you mean? What are you talking about? He goes, I don't want to be your friend.
Which is a horrible thing to hear. But yeah,
right?
That's the truth. Yeah.
Wow.
I wouldn't know.
Great shooter, huh? I thought that this was actually a cringy scene out of all of it.
Oh, yeah.
To be honest with you, with the whole password thing, I thought that was very cringy.
Yeah.
Then everybody thinks that Steven's the asshole because he punches him, and then Chip winds up walking out the door.
Yeah, you're going to pay for this now.
So now we're getting into the climax of it all, though. After doing some investigating, Rick tells Steven that Chip has been fired from the cable company for stalking customers and uses the name of television characters as alias, as Chip calls Stephen that night, telling him that he's paying Robin a visit. Stephen tracks them down to the satellite dish where Chip holds Robin hostage. So you have fake names. Yeah. You have George Jetson. You also have my three sons. And I like how Jack Black goes, my three sons. Yeah. And Stephen's like, what are you talking about? Ernie and Chip Douglas.
Yeah.
So is My Three Sons a particularly big show, or was it a particularly big show in the US at the time? Because we did not get it over here. So
though, not that only was actually would I not the 60s.
Okay.
So not only like an old would rerun. I would not have been able to guess that he was named after a TV character. I mean, Chip Douglas sounds like a made-up name, but I wouldn't have guessed it was based on it. Would American audiences have known pretty early doors that was the name of a TV character?
My age group at that time wouldn't. Okay. But someone that's right. Like my mom's age would. The only reason how I know that TV series or that sitcom was because my mom introduced me to that TV series before this. So that's how I got the reference. If she didn't introduce me to with TV Land and stuff like that with these old sitcoms, I would not have known what my three sons were. But George Jetson, that's pretty much made up.
Yeah, George Jetson, I would have, I caught that one. That I know.
And even Ricky Ricardo and stuff too.
That's, Ricky Ricardo, Lucille Ball.
Yeah.
Yeah. No.
So yeah. Come on, if you're working for a cable company and somebody says, "Oh, what's your name?" Oh. TV references. I'm like, okay, dude, you made up some shit. Yeah, you're not who you say you are.
Yeah. It's like saying your name Indiana Jones or something like that.
Right. What's your name? Indiana. What's your last name? Jones.
Sure.
What's your name?
Then you have this
Terminator
other
2?
Yeah.
Terminator 2.
Run out. Yeah, my name's Terminator 2. Last name, Judgment Day.
Yeah.
Or John Connor.
Yeah.
But then you also have that whole entire thing where Stephen can't sleep. He's having nightmares with about Chip. He goes, cable guy, keeps knocking on the door. He goes, okay, well, I guess I'll be leaving now. Bye. And then he's watching him through the peephole. So I like the POV vision of the watching him through this and watching him like he's a 13-year-old kid playing pranks on his friend. I just thought it was hilarious for that moment. And then, of course, his eyes are turning red like the Terminator and some of that beating him down. So that was actually pretty funny.
Yeah, that scene's good.
What's weird about that scene is that it's not even Jim Carrey being that much more manic than he is usually.
Yeah.
It's not this great big sort of grotesque version of the character. It's pretty much just Jim Carrey.
Just with some crazy eyes. That's it.
Yeah.
But then now we get this other part where where basically you have Steven, he shows up at Robin's house and his neighbor says, oh, he's with some guy named Chip. He said something about going on the information highway.
I wrote down that. Thank you, conveniently informed neighbor. How did you overhear any of that?
Yeah.
Do you know where she is? No. However, I did overhear that she's with a man called Kit Chip and they're going to do this exact thing. I'm well aware.
But why has Robin agreed to this as well?
Again, things that people only do in films. Women do not go with men they do not know in vans to a third location.
Exactly.
That.
Exactly.
Just as a point of safety, never go with someone you don't know in a van.
Unless he told her, and this might be something in an extended cut or something. He's like, hey, look, I'm concerned about my friend Steven. I know that you're concerned about him. Let's try and meet up and see what we can do to help. That'll be the only way that you get this woman inside the car and the only way that you tie her up, hands up and stuff to get her in the van. Other than that, though, you wouldn't be able to.
That's very Ted Bundy-esque. Yeah.
Yeah. But with a cable guy. Let's see. So then we get that whole entire bit again because you can play Mortal Kombat with a friend. You can...
Home shot game or whatever. Yeah.
So we get that whole entire bit again.
Wonder how many times he's done it. How many people has he said that exact same speech standing on that exact same
all dish? Of them. It's part of his stick. So yeah.
He brings all his friends there that he stalks.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So now we have Chip drives into this Chip dives into the satellite dish, knocking out the television signal to the entire town, just as the verdict in a highly publicized case involving a case like the Lyle and Eric Mendez killing is about to be revealed. Chip survives the fall but injures his back. As Steven and Robin reunite, Steven forgives Chip and asks for his real name. And he says, Chip jokingly replies, Ricky Ricardo.
Yeah.
Chip is later taken by the hospital in a helicopter when one of the paramedics addresses him as Buddy. Chip asks the paramedic if he truly is his buddy, to which the paramedic replies, yeah, sure, of course you are, causing Chip to smile in disbelief.
Yeah.
It's, again, the fight sequence on the dish, they seeded that earlier, that Matthew Broderick can beat him because he beat him at medieval times.
Yeah.
So you know that he can beat him in a fight, so it doesn't come out of nowhere. But it generally feels a bit flat as an end. It's the bit after he's fallen and he's being carted away and they're talking to him and they're smiling at him. Like, why are you smiling at this dangerous lunatic? Like, what? He has just tried to kill you both. He's not... I know he's mentally unwell and I know we should be sympathetic to that, but you're not his mate.
I think
no,
before...
you're not his friend at all. But no. I think he's just trying to talk him off that ledge, just like how they Third Eye Blind would say. Talking off that edge so that way nothing happens to him, so that way he can see psychiatric help later on.
Yeah, yeah, that's how I saw it. Like, just, and he redeemed himself. He realized he's gone too far. That's it. I need to kill myself. Like, no, you don't. And that's why there was a line that really made me laugh. I went, this is like GoldenEye. I went, no, it's not like GoldenEye.
This is real life. This is not a movie. And he also quotes Waterworld. He goes, I have seen dry land. I've seen it before. Yeah. It's not a myth. And he goes, it's just like that scene on Waterworld. I've seen that movie 6 times. I love it.
He's shooting staples at him. Brilliant.
Yeah, he takes him up all the way to the very top of it. The satellite dish with the staple gun. And then he's going to staple Robin.
Brilliant.
With the staple gun. It's not even like a real... It's like just one of those public school staple guns.
Yeah.
It's not like anything that could really hurt her.
No.
I mean, it would hurt.
It would hurt, but I mean, not like physically kill her.
No.
I get the worst.
You have more of a sense with like an electric nail gun than you do.
Yeah. With an industrial staple gun, then,
right?
Yeah,
exactly.
That you'd be worried about.
And just going back to what we were saying about, you said the ending felt a bit flat. The original ending was Chip dies. Like, he actually gets impaled on that because it looks like he has been. Then it cuts around and it's not. It's just missed him. It's down there. But yeah, the original ending was he was going to die. And then,
the
like,
funny thing is.
As a reason that being, why you end the film. You know?
Funny thing is, even without being impaled, he still would have died.
He would have been paralyzed.
It would have broken his back, at least. He would not be, he'd not be in good shape.
No.
Yeah, but then there's that great gag. We're about to find out if Stan killed his brother Stan. It all gets cut out. And yeah, Cold Gas just picks up the book and goes, and we never
Somebody's
find out.
Somebody's got to kill the babysitter.
Yeah. Jumps off. Oh, we missed a bit out earlier on when they've dramatized the whole killing and it's Eric Roberts playing Stan and Trey. You've always been a crybaby.
That is brilliant. He is so good in that. Yeah. Eric Roberts is one of those actors that knows how to take the piss out of himself.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah, and then whenever he falls on the dish, he goes, Car 54, Car 54, where are you? Yeah. Car 54. And that's also another reference to an old TV series, Car 54, where are you?
Yes. Yeah. Again, it's one of those things that I'm aware of it. It's like My Three Sons. I know the name. In the same way that I know the name of Three's Company. And actually, the theme tune to Three's Company. But I've never seen a single episode of it.
I've seen Three's Company. I've seen episodes of Three's Company. But never think of Car 54, Where Are You?
No, I've never seen Car 54, Where Are You? I've seen Hogan's Heroes because it was on TV one night when I was in Florida. And I just watched about 5 episodes of it in a row and thought... That's all right.
Yeah, I feel the same way about Hogan's Heroes too. I've actually felt like it was boring. So I knew a friend of mine that loved it. I'm like, I'll pass.
It's more interesting to hear how the lead actor died. It's all very unsavory. it's weird actually. I was thinking about this, like this film generally, and it comes down to that point about it being mean, and the point about that it's not. Have you ever seen a film? Called My Super Ex-Girlfriend.
Yeah, I've heard of it.
Yeah,
I've the Uma Thurman one. So that's got it shares a little bit of DNA with it in that Luke Wilson goes out with Uma Thurman. They then break up. She becomes a bit of a stalker, but she's a superhero. That's sort of the general premise of the film. But the humor in it is so crass, so sexual, and so unpleasant that I turned it off after about 25 minutes. Because I was like, I can't watch this film. And actually, this type of film, this film with The Cable Guy in particular, plays with similar themes, but does it in a way that happened in the sort of mid-90s, where even if it's off color, it's still generally less objectionable than stuff that came out in like the early 2000s. So you're getting there, but it's not quite tipped over into this is disgusting. And I think in the way that it treats everything up to the end, it does it with a fairly even hand. And whilst I say the ending is flat, and I still don't understand why, when he's being put into the helicopter, they're standing there smiling at him like he's their mate and they're quite happy that he's being saved, it's still at least a more generous ending than you could have given it. It could have been bleak and horrible, as you say, Stu.
Yeah.
Right. I definitely agree with that analogy, though, too, because I'm like, yeah, this plays around with it playfully. Versus it crossing that border of like American Pie or something like that. Yeah. We haven't gotten to those raunchy films until like the early 2000s. So it crosses that line, but at the same time, it doesn't necessarily cross it because they don't really show that much to imply anything that's really raunchy other than maybe Robin taking off her shirt, showing the birthmark, and then, of course, that cringy game that they play.
Yeah.
And that's it.
It has more in common with something like Meet the Parents.
That sort of
humor, and not just because that's also got Owen Wilson in it.
Okay,
and Ben.
Where will you rate this one, though, Smith?
Out of 10, I think I'd probably keep it at. If it was an 8 for the sound, I'd probably a 7.
Okay,
I think probably a 7. Yeah,
I'd go with 7 as well. Yeah, okay. It's not awesome. It's not shit. It's a good film. It's a fun film. But yeah, I'd say 7.
Yeah.
Okay. Would this be like something that you would rewatch, like for rewatchability or anything?
Yeah, I think it does.
A couple of years' time, I'd probably watch
it.
I think
5-10 years' time, if I was flicking through my DVD collection and I saw it there, I'd be like, yeah, go on then.
Or if it was on TV and you caught it halfway through, oh yeah, I'll watch this, you know.
Okay. It doesn't have that rewatchability of classic films. It doesn't have that thing where if you start watching something and you just can't stop, like quite recently there was Die Hard with a Vengeance was on TV.
Yeah.
And it was about 10 minutes in, and I flicked over to it. I was like, oh, Die with a Vengeance. And I started watching it before I knew it was 2 o'clock in the morning, and I'd watched it. This film's great. This is one of those films. This isn't one of those. This isn't one of those where you kind of flick on and go, oh, and then it's over. It's because it's at points quite slow and a bit boring here and there. Like there are moments where you could probably just tune out, and that would be the end of it.
Yeah.
I think you need to.
There's moments where it slows down a little bit, especially whenever Steven gets fired. Like that too, because we didn't talk about that part. We breezed kind of past that, but he gets fired for the stuff that he said with Robin and stuff.
Yeah.
About his boss. But still, it kind of slows down.
Would you get fired for that? It's a private conversation where you're telling your girlfriend or friend or whatever that your boss is a dick. Like, would you get
employment,
fired for that?
Employment tribunal waiting to happen. You could sue the company for wrongful dismissal.
Yeah. Yeah,
but also, too, you also accidentally send it out to all the computers.
Yeah, but you'd be able to quite easily prove, I think, with digital audit technology these days that you didn't do that, that wasn't accidentally you. Yeah, I think you'd probably be able to have them up against the wall for unfair dismissal. What you'd have to deal with probably is if you did do that, you didn't get fired, is that your boss would hate you and your career would be completely
lost. That's more realistic.
You wouldn't be getting a promotion anytime soon. You'd have to
leave. Yeah. You'd be back in the mailroom.
Yeah.
You'd have no prospects whatsoever. Now, I don't know what American employment law is like. It might be, it almost certainly is harder. But, anyway.
Yeah. We digress.
We digress.
So, for me, I like this movie. I still will rewatch it and stuff like that. It does slow down, and then it speeds back up in the middle of the movie and stuff. I still quote some of the stuff that's today, but it's not as quotable as some movies. But that I'm gonna probably bring it down to at least a 7.5 for me, just because of the fact that I can basically turn this on and put it on as background noise and still know what's going on with the film.
Definitely.
And it's So that's actually my non-nostalgic self as an adult now looking at it through the modern eyes. We also rated this. So yeah, that's everything that we wanted to talk about as far as the Cable Guy goes. But guys, thank you so much for joining me for this episode. I'm glad that you guys came back on.
Pleasure. Thank you for having us.
Absolutely. Thank you for having us. Always a pleasure.
It's a pleasure, as always, to have you guys here. Go ahead and tell everybody about your podcast and what you guys are doing and what new episode that you guys have coming out.
Sure, yeah. So we are the It Doesn't Hold Up podcast. We review stuff from our childhood as adults and see if it's still good, whether that's a movie, TV show, video game, cartoon, whatever else. The next episode we got coming up is E.T. So we flipped it on its head. Like, that is a beloved classic that everyone loves, but it was a movie that Smith never loved as a child. So he wants to try and see if as an adult if he now likes it as an adult. So we're doing something a little different. But yeah, you can reach us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify. We are on YouTube. We're also on Instagram. And yeah, you can reach us on email as well at doesn'tholduppodcast@gmail.com. But we are on all social medias and all good places you find podcasts and YouTube as well.
All right. So let's see here. I actually have Beth coming on March 6th, at 8 o'clock Central Time, 9 o'clock Eastern Time, talking about The Outsiders. That's the 1983 movie with Ralph Macchio. We're going to be talking about that. I also have another, matter of fact, Rossi and I are going to be reviewing Nosferatu, the new Nosferatu movie. So we are doing something a little bit different. We're going to be reviewing something that is in 2024 versus 1994.
So, yeah. So I would I'd strongly thumbs up Nosferatu.
Yes, it was very good.
It's a very good film, I have to say. But yeah, then I'm also going to do a first-time watch of Copland. So that's not going to be a scene-by-scene review for that. So that's my first time seeing Copland and stuff for the very first time. So no scene-by-scene, but still, we're going to talk about that. And as a matter of fact, I have that coming out. We're going to be shooting that on March 17th at 8 o'clock Central Time, 9 o'clock Eastern Time. Guys, thank you so much for joining me once again. I do appreciate this so much. Don't forget to like, don't forget to subscribe. Also to visit my friends over at the Unfilter Studios podcast. We have the Sleevey G show there. We also have the Stupid History Minute over there. We also have Hypno Hip. We also have Pedals of Support. We also have the Beep. If you don't know who the Beep is, he'll be Finding Your Way podcast. So that's everywhere here at Movie Lovers Unite and Unfilter Studios. And always until next time, have a great and safe day. We'll catch you guys on the next one.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Cleveland Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.